Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
I'm Jim Logue, and welcome to this March 20th edition of At the Organ. This summer, June 26th to July 2nd, the Organ Historical Society will hold its annual convention in Philadelphia. One of the organists who will be at the convention is Stephen Tharp, and he is my guest today on At the Organ. Hello, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, tell us a bit about yourself. Who is Stephen Tharp?
I was born in Chicago and attended church with my family at a very young age, age 5, 6, and was mesmerized by this, what I thought, huge pipe organ in the gallery of the church we attended. And I thought, wow, one person can control all this power and color, and this is just the most fascinating thing in the world. And I begged my parents for music lessons and said, I have to learn how to play this instrument. And so we found a teacher who said, this is all great, but you have to learn what you're doing. You have to learn to read music. You're going to start on the piano. And I wasn't real happy about that at first, but that's what we did. So I had the piano lessons at age 6, stayed with the same teacher, started organ at 8, and kept the two going all the way through college until my real passion, the organ, sort of won out when it was time to choose where I wanted to pursue a career. And so the organ is what I focus on, playing concerts, doing master classes, touring in Europe, making CD recordings. I'm one of those organists who's lucky enough to put a concert career at the forefront of the many things that I do, and I love it.
Now, where did you say you studied music? Just with this teacher there, or did you study at college too, or how did you do that?
Oh, yeah. I studied privately as a kid with a guy based in the Chicago suburbs by the name of James T. Thunder. That is his real name. Great name for an organ teacher. And we stayed together doing piano and organ until I was 14, when I switched to Wolfgang Rubsam, the organ professor at Northwestern University, with whom I studied privately during my high school years. At age 18, I went to Jacksonville, Illinois, downstate from Chicago, about 4 hours, to a liberal arts school called Illinois College, where my piano teacher was Garrett Allman and organ teacher was Rudolf Zeiderfeld. And upon completing that, I went back to Chicago and did my master's at Northwestern, again with Rubsam. And when that was completed, I spent a couple of months privately with Jean Guillou in Paris studying not only his own music, but improvisation as well.
So what was the first position you held as an organist then?
Well, I had different positions here and there in Chicago. I was the assistant of James Thunder at his church, Christ Church at Des Plaines, Illinois. It's the first time I ever had a chance to accompany big oratorios, play hymns, learn how to do liturgical improvisation and things like that. At Northwestern, I played on and off for Richard Webster at St. Luke's Church in Evanston, fabulous Episcopal church with a great E.M. Skinner organ, which I just played this last week in Chicago for a concert. But upon moving to New York in 1995, just after I finished my master's, my first gig here was St. Patrick's Cathedral. So some people thought that's not a bad first gig, quote unquote, to have right out of college and moving to New York.
So do you live in New York right now?
I've been in New York 20 years, yes.
Do you still play at St. Patrick's Cathedral?
No, I was only at St. Patrick's for 2 years. Big full-time jobs start competing with full-time careers, and when you find you have to make a choice, it's always been my traveling and my career that's kind of won out. But I'm at St. James Madison Avenue Episcopal Church in Manhattan now, where I've been artist in residence for about 1.5 years. And so it's a fairly large-scale position where I serve as the organist for the Sunday morning worship services, but it gives me, in addition to the practice space, as a position, a lot of flexibility. So I have a certain number of weekends per year during the season itself where I can be away, and then I also have my summer free, which is when a lot of the big European festivals are happening in short time increments, say 12 or 13 concerts in the span of 4 weeks. And so this position gives me a lot of flexibility that way. It's just fantastic.
That's good. That's good to have that kind of flexibility, especially when you have the kind of a touring career that you have to merge it with playing at a church like that.
Bingo. And it's a fantastic practice space. We have an organ by Schoenstein. It's their largest East Coast installation. It's a gallery instrument. It was put in 2009 while the church was under renovation. And the chancel organ, which is the larger part of it, was put in 2010. And it's a fantastic service instrument. It's a great and very luxurious practice instrument, and I just love it.
Earlier this month on our full-time station, Organ Live, we had a live dedication for a Schoenstein pipe organ from a church in Missouri. Beautiful instrument.
Yeah, very, very colorful, and especially as a liturgical instrument accompanying Anglican chant, English repertoire, it's a dream.
So how many concert recitals do you do approximately in a year?
It varies a little year to year, and it is largely determined by how often I'm in Europe, which is where I do, I'd say, 75% of my concertizing. So somewhere between 25 and 30 per year is common.
What is the most memorable event that you've ever played?
It's hard to say because I've, at this point, done more than 1,500 or so recitals, and it's hard to single out how one thing could be the standout of all concerts. But in recent memory, closing the AGO National Convention in Boston 2 years ago and performing my transcription of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring at the Mother Church pretty much stands out. If you have an audience of 3,000 people and 2,000 of them are your colleagues and you have an opportunity to play that kind of music at that kind of occasion, that's pretty much a pinnacle. I wanted something that would really push me. And so for that event, I decided to do a really large-scale program that ended with my Stravinsky transcription. And that's the kind of thing that's hard to top.
You played a lot of organs throughout your career. Are there any that you could say are your favorite organs to play?
Well, there are great modern organs, great historic organs. St. Bavo in Harlem, the Netherlands, the Mueller organ of 1738, Saint-Sulpice in Paris, the Gabler organ of Weingarten on the other end of the spectrum, Wolsey Hall, Yale University, the great Skinner, Royal Albert Hall in London, the great Harrison and Harrison organ. I could name all kinds of little two-manual Baroque instruments I've encountered in Italy and in Spain. The Fisk at the Meyerson, Disney Hall in Los Angeles. There are, you know, lots and lots of different kinds of organs. We're so lucky as organists to have the broadest instrument with the richest eclectic history of, you know, how many hundreds of years. And so it's like asking, what's your favorite steak restaurant? What's your favorite pasta? What's your favorite potato chip? And the answer is yes, because you have about 10 options no matter what you're asking. And the organ is such a rich and rewarding instrument in that way. And I feel very lucky to be able to tour and record as much as I do on all kinds of instruments from all kinds of periods of history.
Are there any composers that you might say are your favorite?
Not really. I could name maybe 10 for each period in music. I like transcribing music. I think if you have a kind of organ that plays an adaptation of some other instrument's music well, there's no reason not to do it. So I love Rachmaninoff on the organ when it works, Stravinsky. I love Vaughan Williams, Ravel, Liszt, certainly. And all of these things have historic precedent if you want to get into that discussion, because Liszt was always making arrangements for piano of his organ music, vice versa. Bach adapted Vivaldi Concerti for solo organ. And so it's part of a legitimate palette of the organ's language. And so the repertoire is filled with so much music, and it's not that you want to play transcriptions and therefore not organ music, or the other way around. I think the answer is you do both. And so good music by any composer is rewarding.
And of course, it's more of a challenge to transcribe a full orchestra piece than it is a single instrument, correct?
Absolutely. That's where a challenge like The Rite of Spring came in, because it's something I'd wanted to do for some years, having done some dances from Stravinsky's Petrushka nearly 20 years ago now. And I thought, well, The Rite of Spring could be something fun to challenge at some point. And I sat down over the course of 6 months and just did it 1 year. It wasn't transcribed for the Boston Convention. I had performed it at the Brick Church here in New York City about 4 years before the Boston concert. But I'd wanted to do that for a long time, and sort of a goal that I set for myself, and it panned out nicely.
Do you compose any of your own original music?
Not as often as I'd like. I'm someone who needs a muse. I don't compose on deadlines and then just create. I'm not as versed at that as I am, say, at playing. But if I have a specific project, then it's fun to meet the challenge. I wrote a piece called Easter Fanfares for the organist of Cologne Cathedral in 2006 because they added a set of chamades at the other end of the cathedral from the organ, the main organ. And they wanted a piece to use on Easter weekend where they would unveil these stops during the postlude of all the Easter masses, and Easter Fanfares was the result of that. I also wrote a piece called Disney's Trumpets for the Walt Disney Hall organ, and I premiered it there. It was based on some small riffs from a song by David Bowie, of all things, that I sort of used as a guise and developed as a motive to show off the reed stops of the organ.
As you mentioned, you can get inspiration really from all different sources, like you said, David Bowie, or even just anything you might hear on the radio gives you some inspiration for things too, right?
Absolutely, and in the weirdest ways, you'll have something as an earworm that you never thought would be an earworm, and at first it's annoying because it doesn't go away, and then after a while, you can take it and turn it into something else and get it out of your system, and then you don't have the earworm anymore. I think that's sort of what happened with Disney's Trumpets.
Now, tell us about your association with the Oregon Historical Society. As I mentioned, you're going to be at the convention in June. Tell us about your association with the society.
Well, there are memberships to organizations in the United States that organists usually have. The American Guild of Organists is the most main one, and then there are others such as the Oregon Historical Society. And I'm members of both, of course, and was asked to do the opening concert for their Philadelphia convention at the end of June. And so that is going to come up rather fast. It's at Irvine Auditorium on the campus of University of Pennsylvania. It's a big 162 rank organ by the Austin Company from the 1920s, and it's a fantastic vehicle for big romantic war horses and also transcriptions, and there's a bit of both on the program.
And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the National Convention for the Oregon Historical Society will be June 26th to July 2nd in Philadelphia. According to the convention schedule, I believe you'll be playing opening day, Sunday, June 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Irvine Auditorium.
That sounds right. Their convention website has details. My website, stephentharp.com, has other details as well.
Do you know what music you'll be playing yet, or are you still working that part out yet?
No, that's been submitted. There's going to be some Duraflay. There's going to be some Bruce Simons, American composer. George Baker, who has composed a number of things I play, has written me a new piece called Danse Diabolique, and it will receive its world premiere. I also have transcriptions done for me by various colleagues on the program, one of Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on the theme of Thomas Tallis, and another of Ravel's La Valse. Those will both be on the program, and it's kind of like closing the AGO convention in Boston. It's a big week, and it's the opening event, and so I want to sort of do a program on a very grand scale, and that's what we'll have.
So in addition to the convention, what are some other performances on your schedule?
Quite a bit in Europe. August is usually when I hit the most festivals in one go, because that's when a lot of people in, say, France, Germany, take vacations out of the year. And so you don't always see the colleagues in the cities that you go to, but you meet all sorts of new people because they're on vacation. And so these big festivals are put on, and they're filled with people, having hundreds or even thousands of people at a venue to hear an organ recital every week for 6 or 8 weeks is not uncommon at all. So there's quite a bit in Germany, in Rome, happening this summer, some smaller concert trips to Germany in particular later in the year, and also the Terra Sancta Organ Festival in Israel, which is a fairly new thing. And I have concerts there in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Nazareth at the end of October, interspersed with some American programs too. There's a new Quimby pipe organ just installed at Fourth Presbyterian Church in Chicago, and in November I'm going to play the one-year anniversary concert for this. And so a number of fun things like that are on the docket.
How about recording projects? Do you have anything new, like recording your CD or a videotape program coming up soon?
Not video. There is a potential CD project in the works. I can't really reveal it yet because we haven't gone public, but yes, there will be another CD of mine on the market this year.
So we're going to check your website out, stephentharp.com?
That's correct.
Now, some sources say that there is a decline in organ music and interest in the music. Some schools have dropped their organ programs. Now, first of all, do you think that decline is true? And whether it is or not, what do you think are some good ways to get more people, especially young people, interested in playing the organ?
Well, a couple of answers to that. Number one, very simply, education. I think it depends who you ask, and that determines what answer you're going to get to that scenario. I don't really think the organ's in as dire straits as some of the people who say that really think it is. I think the organ, frankly, is doing just fine. When you look at the number of big departments at schools like Rice, Juilliard, Yale University, and Indiana University, and look at the number of people under 30 who are entering competitions, putting up YouTubes, have websites, travel, enter managements. The Diapason magazine had something called 20 under 30. It's a big layout article of all these people in their 20s doing incredibly wonderful things. And that's just speaking in the United States, not to mention all of the academies in Europe, the education level that starts at grade school level on, the numbers of young people and families that show up at concerts that have hundreds of people in attendance. I think it's a matter of what we're sometimes aware of and not aware of, but the reality is the same in that there's a lot going on and a lot of young people doing it, and I don't really see the decline like you might have thought the last decade or so. I think it's actually on the rise. I think it's doing very well.
And definitely, I think it's good to present the organ to young people, since I think it's fair to say that most of us who play the organ started out at a young age.
The younger you get somebody interested, the more it sticks. It certainly was the case with me. I was lucky because my family, as I mentioned, attended church. Pipe organ encounters, pipes and pizza events where we'll have a day of introducing kids to the organ, and we'll have puzzles and games and little fact sheets and time for a 10-year-old to have hands-on at a console. And what does a string sound like? What is a reed? What does a big tuba sound like? And you have some pizza, and then someone plays a recital and that kind of thing. I think that's absolutely vital because it's part of the education that they get at a very, very, very young age. And AGO chapters everywhere should simply be doing it. You can volunteer your time. It's not a matter of having funding or resources or not. Education, education, education. It's the key.
One unique aspect of the pipe organ, and you touched upon it when you mentioned you were performing for the one-year anniversary of an organ, people celebrate when an organ is installed or the anniversary of an organ installation. You don't hear that with too many other instruments. Do you have any kind of dedications or other anniversaries on your schedule?
I don't have any dedications this season. I am playing, as I mentioned, Fourth Presbyterian in Chicago, what will be the one-year anniversary concert of that instrument in November. In January, I'm playing for the 25th anniversary of the Rafati at Spivey Hall in Atlanta. The Rite of Spring transcription will be on both of those concerts, incidentally. This is the first year I'm actually touring with the transcription, which maybe a gutsy move, maybe kind of a dumb move. It's a big thing to bite off, and it takes a lot of energy, and it takes above and beyond practice hours. You spend another 2 days more on average at a location to do that transcription than I would with any other program. But there are a couple of people who requested it specifically, and it's worked out to do it. So I have that coming up.
As we know, Holy Week is right around the corner, and any organist who works at a church is going to be pretty busy. Do you have a lot of things scheduled for Holy Week?
Yep, that's the one big week of the year where absolutely everything else I'm preparing goes on standstill, and you focus just on the fullest week a church musician has in any time in the year. There's a lot of very, very wonderful things coming up here. Always, always rewarding on so many levels.
Now, how many services does your church have on Easter Sunday?
It's the same as any other. We do two morning services with different choirs, and there's a 6 o'clock evening service, which is more casual with piano and some instruments. It's all done in a very tasteful sort of way, but it's for people who don't come in the morning or maybe have been away from the city for the weekend. And it's not a service that I play. I only do the ones in the morning. So it will be the same three for Easter Sunday that we usually have on a Sunday.
Stephen Tharp, my guest today on At the Organ. Be sure to check his website for a schedule, for album information, and for anything to do with Stephen Tharp. That website is www.stephentharp.com. Stephen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The Organ Historical Society's 61st Annual Convention will be held June 26th to July 2nd in Philadelphia. 7 days filled with concerts and lectures, tours of various churches and residences to hear some of the area's most historic organs. Some of the organs you'll see and hear include the Wanamaker Grand Court Organ at Macy's in Philadelphia, and the largest pipe organ in the world, the Boardwalk Hall Organ in Atlantic City, and so many more. Visit www.organsociety.org to learn more and to register. If you live in Minnesota, this might be of interest to you. Bethlehem Lutheran Church on Lindell Avenue South in Minneapolis, Minnesota, will celebrate the 50th anniversary of its pipe organ, built in 1966 by Cousavant Freres. The organ contains 3 manuals, 4 divisions, 44 stops, 43 registers, and 55 ranks. To help celebrate, organist Ken Cohen will be at the church the weekend of April 9th and 10th. On Saturday, April 9th, he'll conduct a master class for organists from 9:30 to 11:30. And on Sunday, from 4 to 6 p.m., Ken Cowan will present a solo organ concert. Ken Cowan is head of the organ department at Rice University in Houston, Texas. For more information, visit BethlehemMusicSeries.org.
You're listening to At the Organ on OrganLive.com.
My guest today on At the Organ was Stephen Tharp. You heard from him earlier in the program. The music you're listening to right now in the background is from Stephen Tharp. This is from his CD called Legendary Organ Works, Volume 1, being played on the 1931 E.M. Skinner pipe organ at Girard College Chapel in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is composed by Herbert Howells, Psalm Prelude Set 2, Number 1, Out of the Depths I Have Cried Unto Thee, O Lord, a perfect selection for Lent. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of At the Organ. A special thank you to my guest today, Stephen Tharp. You can listen to Stephen's interview, as well as this entire show, or any of our past episodes of At the Organ, on our website, www.attheorgan.com. And don't forget our full-time classical organ music stations. Organ Live, playing classical organ music from throughout the history of organ music. That website is www.organlive.com. We have Positively Baroque, playing organ music exclusively from the Baroque period. That website, positivelybaroque.com. And The Organ Experience, which plays blocks of 30 minutes to 2 hours of similarly themed music. Visit organexperience.com. I'm Jim Logue. Thank you for joining me today on At the Organ.
At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at the Organ.